I'm going to miss athletes like Chris Bassett. I think we can all acknowledge that athletes, managers, coaches, they're getting PR'd out.
Oh, yeah.
There's far more people working in PR now than there are in any journalism, any newsroom. They're cranking PR people out at schools. You want a job? They're hiring. PR, 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 PR. And there's this, I don't want to say revolution, but there's an abundance, an oversaturation now of podcasts in general, but certainly now athlete-driven podcasts, right? Where it's, well, now Carmelo Anthony has a podcast, but then he says stuff like, my Olympic medals are worth more than NBA championships. And then all the guys around him are like, hell yeah, Melo. You're the guy paying for us to sit around and chop it up, yeah. So we agree.
That's right, boss.
Yeah, it's kind of like these, we need to come up with a name for them because they're calling them documentaries, but they're obviously not documentaries, right?
Like the self-produced documentary.
Yeah, listen, I'm as big of a Shaq fan as there is, and I loved his, I'm doing air quotes, documentary, yeah. Because I'm a Shaq fan, but it's it's him. He's in the editing bay watching them pick the clips out. It's more of a, hey, remember how awesome Shaq was?
Yeah.
It's basically souped up highlight reel with, it's director's cut highlight reel.
Which, I mean, still sounds
sick.
Good, but isn't a documentary.
So but the player podcast, you're going to get some moments where there's some good stuff. I think there are some that are clearly better than others, but also it's just, you're never going to get the athlete challenged on it, much like all of these things. Players Tribune. I guess there's no room for comments on Players Tribune, but you get my drift here. The podcasts, the documentaries, they're going to be what people think are real windows into somebody's opinion, question, but really, it's not. It's going to be their version of it. Most of the stuff that we're going to get from teams and after games and often even when I try to do this stuff and break it down, people have a pretty easy critique of being like, well, what did you expect them to say? And that's because we live in the hardcore PR era. But every once in a while, you get a tidbit like Chris Bassett gave us yesterday. And for those of you that haven't heard it, I am going to play it. And I'm going to interrupt over top of it because it's a long clip. But he's on with Chris Rose, again, like a broadcaster. And he's asking about the Blue Jays season. And yesterday, it blew up all over the internet because of a variety of different reasons. And I do want people to hear it, the like unedited version of this thing, because I think it's important to actually hear it in his own words and hear it in the context rather than reading the tweet, because I've been victim of that. I don't know about how many of you, but I oftentimes have read a tweet and gone, oh, that's what that guy said?
Yeah, and this was an example of that for sure. Like, you first saw the Bassett quote and you're like, wow, he said that? But you listen to it, you get some more context.
I'll admit that I think I actually kind of got a little tripped up. The one I'm thinking of recently was the one with Marner. I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but he said something. It was one of those, like, that's up to you guys. Like, it made it more seem as though it was a bit more adversarial towards media and fans than it actually ended up being. Anyway, here's Chris Bassett sharing his thoughts on this Blue Jays season.
The one thing I will say about the Blue Jays for this year is we put, I think, $700 million into Shohei Ohtani's basket and didn't get him. That was the reality. And then I think our pivot was we really didn't have a pivot to, like, say, another elite player. Because in today's baseball, this is the reality of the landscape, is that you need three or four superstars. That's just the reality. You look at all the really, really, really good teams. They are not doing it with one superstar. They're legit doing it with three or four superstars. Like, that's just the nature of this game now, is that you cannot, the way that pitching is, the way that kind of bullpens are set up, if you have one hitter or two hitters in your lineup, you literally cannot be good at all.
Okay, pause. Pause number one, Mike. Okay, so Bassett reached out to Shai and Arden yesterday with some like clarifications as to what he was truly saying. But let me just start off by saying this. No offense to Chris. I believe him to some degree in terms of him saying, oh, well, there's some clarification I could have on what I'm saying. Sure. Do I think that this is all just walking everything back? No, there's probably a little bit of nuance to what he said. But ultimately, I do think that was that. The Jays are going, oh, my God, Chris, why, man? Why? We don't want to have to ask you to stop doing stuff like this, and you're a veteran, and blah, 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 but this really is just not the kind of attention that we need, and they're definitely talking about that. They definitely saw these comments, and it bothered people, okay? Like, 0% that this Chris thought on his own accord that it was, oh, a smart thing to do to reach out to the media and let them know that here's what he was actually trying to say. So, he said, quote, there's no pivot after Otani. Otani was the number one, the so-called big fish. We didn't get it. The free agent market was Otani, and it wasn't like a number one or number two, number three or that. We went after the biggest guy. Unfortunately, we didn't get him. That's not a knock against the Blue Jays. It's a knock against it's not a knock against anybody. He obviously picked a great team. There wasn't another option. That's just the reality. There wasn't. And then we try the best we can. Obviously, we've got Turner and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and we called him War King because he was an unbelievable player. So we got good players. It was just Otani was the best of the best. Can't say the front office didn't have ambition to be great. You can't say the front office didn't have the goal of the best possible. Anyway, blah, 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 end quote. Kind of a weird walk back. Like, I think most people do understand that there wasn't a lot out there with Otani. We did a million shows on this, how they didn't have a real farm system. How many shows did I do outlining these fake trades people were putting out there for Juan Soto, saying like, this is not going to happen. There was a reason why it was nonstop Kylie McDaniels on the station going, hey, is the Blue Jays system as bad as it seems? Yeah, they got two guys. They didn't even want to trade Ricky Tiedemann at the time. And basically everybody told me that Aroldis Martinez before the steroid suspension was like one of these polarizing prospects that some teams viewed as a little bit higher, but a lot of teams had even lower than what he was ranked by some publications like Baseball America. Blah, 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 blah. All this is to say, I thought it was refreshingly honest. I enjoyed hearing Chris Bassitt speak this way, and I think that there was a lot that was in this that was good. There was a lot of this that I think fans, it resonated with them. I listened to all of it and didn't really pick anything out where I went like, this is completely unfair and this is really unfounded. And it kind of goes to, hey, the players aren't dumb. They're talking about the same things that we're talking about. It maybe more quietly than this in most cases. They're probably saying some things that are, just about as bad as some of your friends are. But when he talked about the stuff that can't be fixed and then tried to walk back that part of it, I went, no, man, no. That's the kind of stuff that they really do need to dig into and figure out. And when he talked about the miles on the tires and the age, it's like, again, these are conversations that we are all having. People that are within that organization, the guys that actually have to take the field, are talking about the same holes, the same issues, and probably even more of them that we've identified, which has made people dubious about their ability to actually compete next year, to compete in 2025. So, yeah, I thought it was enlightening, but I also think, again, for a front office that can often be, I don't want to say oblivious, but can try to like really block out the noise and get defensive, I hope this at least was a window of, oh, wait, this is one of your own guys talking about that there's things that he doesn't want to get into. There's things, that's kind of the guy where you go, wait, sit down with us and tell us what you think those things actually are. Because I would personally want an honest assessment from, one of the more respected players in the clubhouse about what he thinks. Because if you don't have your guys believing they can win next year, that there's too many problems, I don't think you got a hope in hell. Anyways, Jeff Blair, Blair and Barker. Hey, what's up, man? How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. We got content, so that was great. It's the dead season, and Chris Bassitt just came from the heavens and was like, last week it was Matthews getting captaincy, making a big deal out of that. Are we making too big a deal out of Chris Bass's comments because it's a dead week? Like, where are you at with it?
Well, no.
Yeah.
I don't think we are. Pardon me. And, this is the way I look. First of all, the Blue Jays are such a polarized. I mean, they're not even a polarizing team. Mm-hmm. Be with the Blue Jays right now. And anything that anybody says about the Blue Jays, It's like the old Spinal Tap thing. It's going to be 11, right? Mm-hmm. on the volume knob. It's going to be 11. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob Nightingale reports that Bo Bichette isn't going to be back after next year. And I'm not taking anything away from Bob, but you know, that's not. I mean, I think most people just kind of accept that and assume it. But you know, because of where we are at the team right now, it resonates even more. Here's what I'll say podcast about Chris Bassett's comments. First of all, those were his comments. They weren't distilled. We didn't read them in a newspaper. That was Chris with ostensibly as much time as he needed making a point about the Blue Jays. He could have spoken about it for half an hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. He could have said what he said to Arden and Shy on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Every opportunity to provide context. What he said about Ohtani is absolutely accurate. It that's where I will say it probably didn't come across the way he wanted it to, because it sounded as if what he was saying is the Blue Jays pooched it.
Yeah.
They spent so much time on Ohtani that, you know, they there was no pivot. And essentially it sounded like he was basically telling the organization, you guys waste time. He could have gone up, but there was no other option there. You know, that the Jays minor league system didn't have enough heft to get a Soto deal done. He could have done that. I don't think Chris Rose would have cut him off. So the stuff he said about Vladdy was absolutely and that, you know, I mean, that clip kind of, it was on about anybody who's played with Vladdy. If you go up to them and say, should they sign him to a long-term contract?
Yeah, yeah.
They go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't think there's anything about that. The thing for Chris Bassett is he's a smart guy. And when you go out and you tell people that you give them the wrong, but I really don't want to talk about it. And then you kind of move on. Yeah, again, there was nothing preventing Chris from expanding during the podcast. And I'm not taking anything away from Arden and Shy by any stretch of the imagination. They did their job. You know, the fact felt the need 12, 13, however many hours later, context. I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
If you could have provided.
Oh, we lost Jeff. So hold on. We're going to reconnect with him right now. Yeah, that's where I'm at with it too. Everything he said after I'm with him. The Ohtani answer, that kind of made sense. Everything else, I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to go with what you said from the gut. I'm going to go with what you said when you were shooting from the hip on this one. Like, the stuff about the things that can't be fixed, he goes into it and he's like, oh, what can't be fixed is that I'm old. Like, yeah, I don't think that's what you were referencing, man. I think that actually would have been one that you would have quite easily brought up. Like, you and your age and the arms, like, of course those are things that he would have referenced and that he would have pointed to. He was even mentioning that he's trying to protect guys and he doesn't want to create drama. So why release it later if that was the context in which you were speaking of? Anyway, sorry, Jeff, we got you back here. Yeah, anyways, I was just agreeing with you that it was pretty clear that, yes, the Ohtani part of it could have used some clarification. And I think that, again, Chris Bassett's a very smart guy who pays very close attention to the league. I don't think he thought, like, they pooched it or they should have taken that $700 million and given it to, like, Cody Bellinger. But the other stuff after it, the key stuff that I really think they got to hunker down on is the problems that he doesn't think that the Blue Jays can fix. Because I'm not buying for a second that it's because he's 36 years old and that's what he meant.
No, listen, and you know, again, this is the context that we need to think about is the fact that everybody in the city thinks this front office doesn't know what the hell it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. So, and I'm sure Chris Bassett is aware of that. this is, and you know, to provide further context, this is a guy who is it? When in your final start or second last start before the trade deadline, and you are on a team that is underachieved, that isn't going to the playoffs, and you are asked by a reporter post-game, so this year, and your response is to pitch in the playoffs. Well, you might say, boy, that's a guy manning up. Boy, that's the type of guy we want. It put two and two together. I want to pitch in the playoffs. I'm currently pitching on a team that has got no chance in hell of going to the playoffs. Two plus two equals trade me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ed, he can walk it back now because he won. Do I think this is a big prevent Chris Bassitt from coming back next year if the Blue Jays decide to run this back? No, not at all. I think this is... As my friend Kevin Barker says, watch Chris Bassitt on the mound. He's a needy guy. Like, there's a lot going on out there. Everything is a crisis, right? That's sort of his persona, the kind of deputy dog, you know, it's going wrong, the way Chris Bassitt is, he usually deals and usually delivers. So long-term, I don't think it's going to have any implication for Chris Bassitt or his career here. He's under contract for another year. He's making good money. I don't think he's going to, if they run it back next year, expect Chris Bassitt to go out and, and be good. But, he talked about the things, the things I really, there's stuff going on and, don't really want to talk about it. And then he comes out later and says, well, I'm talking about age. All he had to say in the podcast is, you know what? We got older pitchers. We got a lot of miles on our arms. Mm-hmm. Maybe the organization be a little more proactive and bring in younger arms.
Yeah, I'm steadfast in the idea that he did not reference anything in that podcast that was to do with the arms and the age of the arms. I think that, and we're switching Jeff to phone line because the whatever he's on, the computer that he's working through, it's not working. Jeff's saying interesting stuff, and when it drops out, it breaks me. But yeah, so I think that the context is pretty clear. What I think is really interesting here is Bassitt is a vocal guy in general. Like, this guy hasn't been shy when it comes to microphones and saying how he feels, and like he really, this guy wears his heart on his sleeve. In fact, I remember when the Jays first signed him and had Dallas Braden on podcast, and he was talking about how everybody's going to love this guy because you always know where he stands. So, yeah, I think that when he speaks that way with someone he trusts, that, yeah, he's giving you a pretty honest assessment. What I think is really good to kind of try to pick from this, when we got Blair back, is recently there's been the Bo stuff, right? And the Bo stuff has been lingering all season. And Blair, I think you mentioned, it seems kind of obvious at this point that this guy's not happy here when he's sitting in San Francisco dugouts going, and San Francisco is the, what has he said? He says, first and foremost, I want to win. That would be the number one thing if I was choosing a team, and the Giants are committed to that. And they're in a position to get the right type of players. You see Nate Pearson and whatever, it's Nate Pearson, but he talked about how he kind of felt my time was coming on to move from the Blue Jays. Both sides, time to move on, end quote from Pearson. Bassitt's been on the record before on this stuff. Do you think that this is just the normal vibes of a team that had high expectations that is outside of the playoffs, that is a little bit older, where these guys are upset? Or these little leaks that end up coming out about, the room and the clubhouse and the way guys are feeling, that this is more than that. This is more than just a team that's frustrated with losing.
Yeah, I think it's more than simply a team that's frustrated with losing. What I find good and what I find interesting, because I compare this to 2009 when Cito Gaston took over from John Gibbons and basically had a clubhouse mutiny. I mean, you had Aaron Hill, Roy Halladay, Vernon Wells, Rod Barajas, who was on the team then, going to Paul Beeston, the president, and demanding a meeting at the end of the year and talking about how Cito Gaston was not responsive and to their needs, and that they found him too negative. I mean, all sorts of stuff. I mean, that resulted in J.P. Ricciardi being fired as general manager. It was kind of the last straw for J.P. What I'm getting at here is the thing I find interesting, and I guess the thing that would kind of make me be really careful about where Chris Bassett is, like ultimately who he's pointing at here, is the fact that so far we haven't heard a lot of dissatisfaction with John Schneider from within the clubhouse, right? You know, you think about John Schneider's tenure. I think, you know, Matt Chapman was unhappy last year towards the end of the year when John Schneider took him out for a pinch hitter. But by and large, whatever unhappiness there is, so far at least, it hasn't been directed to the manager. So I think that's good, because that suggests to me that the clubhouse itself, obviously they're not happy, but that the clubhouse itself hasn't turned on itself or hasn't turned on the manager. So that, you know, that alleviates a bit of the sense of a crisis just from looking on the outside. But the natural extension of that, how can you tell I was texting with Morosi this morning? The natural extension of that, JD, is that, okay, who is he kind of pointing at?
I think it's got to be
the front office, man. It's got to be the front office.
That's it.
And Chris Bassett would certainly not be the first player to try to use the media to get a message through to the front office. Right. Like, you know, hey, you know, we need help here. And I don't know what that says about the organization. I really don't. But it's certainly just going to add to the sense that that this is an organization that at the front office level is just kind of, you know, it's just kind of going here and going there and going here and going there. And it's almost like, you know, it's almost like the, any snake oil salesman that comes along, these guys are going to jump on it, you know? And that is, that feeds into the narrative that this front office hasn't been able to contain. I mean, they haven't been able to grab this thing by the horns and try to spin it in their favor. And indeed, at times, and maybe this is a credit to them, at times it seems that they don't care how they're perceived.
I think they don't publicly, they seem to. I don't think privately. Like, that's when Chris Bassett, again, he referenced unfixable problems, right? If it was the manager, that's the most fixable thing that has ever been fixable, right? So I can't imagine that a smart guy like Bass is referencing that. And then even if you're going through the comments, that everything he's talking about that the team needs is like front office stuff. It's all front office decisions. This isn't like a hard, like the codex for this. We don't need code breakers. Like he's referencing the front office and the moves that they've made. And then talking about the comments around other guys, it brings me back to the Barrios decision and hearing Whit Merrifield speak about it before he leaves and hearing the guys in that clubhouse, the way they felt about that decision. And then Ross and Mark's media conferences where, what did Mark, he had some big thing about the communication needs to be better and we got to figure out who the right guys are in the room and all this stuff. And then that kind of went away and it's another lost year. And it really feels like from that point forward and whatever that slide was at the end of last season, that the wound hasn't closed with these guys, that they're probably frustrated with, I don't know, their level of input or their level of communication with the front office, like that they've got essentially the same gripes that the fans have.
Yeah, look, just imagine, you know, just look at the Blue Jays media guide and go through the front office and the number of people in it. Who would you go to talk to if you had an issue, if you were a player or a pitcher? Like, which, you know, we're already told that essentially the way it works with the hitting coaches this year is you kind of get bounced around. You spend some time with this guy, then you spend some time with this guy, then you spend some time with this guy, then you're back to this guy, then you go to this guy, then you go to the other guy, then you're back to that guy. This organization spends so much time thinking about how it can be smarter than everybody else that it wastes a lot of energy that should be utilized being smarter than everybody else. That's very much a philosophical thing. Like, I'm not saying, I know that in this day and age, you're never going to have, you know, you're not going to have a four-person front office anymore, right? You're not going to have the GM as two senior advisors, the assistant GM and a director player person. I mean, everybody's got to have a guy who's 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 got to have a guy. That's just the way it is. It's better to have six people involved in the decision-making process than one. That's just the way modern baseball functions. And part of the problem when you find yourself in that situation is, you know, the first thing that happens is people feel the need to defend their jobs. And how do you defend your job? Well, you create more work than may be necessary, right? You hold on to a job in a front office in baseball these days by making everybody think you're really smart and that you're an expert in something that nobody else in the front office is an expert in. And that's just systemic. It's not certainly simply, you know, to do with the Blue Jays. A lot of teams are like that. But, yeah, you know, I look at the news conferences that Ross and Mark had at the end of the year last year, and I still believe it. If someone had gone to Ross and say, you know, Ross, shut up. You know, after the Brios thing, don't say anything until Mark speaks. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, nobody, honest to God, I don't think anybody wanted to hear from Ross. And they sure as hell didn't want to hear from him on a Saturday morning. Right? Or Sunday morning,
they didn't
whatever.
I want to hear what he had to say, because when he did, it was like, holy crap, this is like unbelievably bad.
But if you compare, and I understand, look, you know, I'll say this about Mark. Mark, as soon as Mark comes into Toronto and everybody thinks he's the Andy Alex, and so anything Mark Shapiro says, I mean, it's not going to get the same hearing that anything Alex Anthopoulos says. I get all that. But if the Jays' approach had been after that game, everybody shut the hell up. The president of the team is going to speak on Monday. Let's let him address the situation. After that, if you want the GM to do a news conference and talk about what the next steps are, that's fine. But let the president address the situation with Jose Berríos. I think things would have been looked at a little differently. But you know, Ross wanted to do this news conference. He came in. And I mean, it didn't solve anything. If anything, it just added, you know, fuel to the fire. And I'm with you. I don't think this fan base, I don't think a lot of us in the media, as much as, you know, we matter or don't matter, I don't think we ever really got closure from what happened in that game in Minnesota. And, you know, there was a comment from Jose Berríos in spring training that I thought was really, really telling. And I'm surprised that it didn't get a little more run than it received. We know that this was talked about before that playoff game. Like the idea that John Schneider and Ross Atkins, that they blindsided the players by doing this is bull. The pitchers knew that this was a possibility. That this is how the Jays were going to play this out. But, you know, Jose Berríos in spring training was asked about it, and he said, yeah, we talked about it. And I'm paraphrasing him here. Yeah, we talked about it. But I was pitching so well that I didn't think that it would, you know, that it would come to pass or that the plan was still in effect. And I think that's what happened in this situation. And I don't think we've ever really, had closure from that. I think it's created an issue. It's created. It was Morosi yesterday. I think maybe used the phrase. There's a trust deficit right now.
Yeah.
Between the front office, the players, the fans, and everybody, there really is a trust deficit, and part of it goes back to that.
Yeah, but when it's your players, when it's your players, I think you're cooked. So
absolutely.
My reference to this is if you're a player and you lose in a heartbreaking fashion, I think you can bounce back from it because you go, man, I could have controlled something better. You know, I could have thrown a better pitch there. Like I made the mistake. But if it's on the coaching staff or the front office, I think it's harder to forget it. And the closest reference I have to it is I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. And I watched Pete Carroll decide to not hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch on a 1-yard line in a Super Bowl. And the players never let it go. And again, it's the Super Bowl and it's the 1 yard line versus a wild card game. But even still, it wasn't in the players' hands. If you would have asked those players, every single one of the Seahawks outside of maybe Russell Wilson would have been like, hand the ball to the guy named Beast Mode and let him punch it in from the 1 yard line. Much like that decision was, hey, let the guy who's cruising, who we pay big bucks to, finish this ball game. Let him pitch. Let him be the one that decides it. And now to enter this year where all of a sudden things aren't working out right, you have that exciting offseason where all of a sudden you guys think Shohei Ohtani's on the plane too. I think that the parallels, the way that these guys feel, is in some ways probably worse than the fans. And so my next question to you is like, okay, so The Athletic, right, they run this poll. And out of 40 executives across Major League Baseball, Atkins Shapiro gets zero votes. It's anonymous when it comes to the best front office rankings. And by the way, there's points for 1 through 5 in this rankings. The players are pissed off. The fans are pissed off. Like, what? Why are we still doing this? Like, why is this still so, like, pretty much consensus that this is going to be run back during the offseason? That's the part of this I just don't get. I don't understand.
I mean, part of it is because Mark Shapiro, right now, at least, I think. I mean, he's got the ultimate power here. He's got a year left in his contract. You know, that's another story that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, to the GM's extent, got Mark more Shapiro. Term.
GM's got more term, and that, listen, that's not Mark's a sharp guy. That's not by accident. Mm-hmm. It's always good to leave yourself in a position where one of the selling points you can make to your employers is, well, you know, the other guys that I hired are going to be here the year after me. So, I mean, believe me, that is in no way accidental. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, I mean, that's another issue. Look at it at some point. Mark was able to sell people on the idea that he was focused on the ballpark. And I take him at his word. I think he was focused on the ballpark. I know people get sick of the ballpark, but you know what? I keep telling people, you know, getting this ballpark up to snuff, up to major league standards, and getting it in a position where it can generate a lot of revenue, quite frankly, for the long-term best interest of this organization,
that's more important
than signing Vladdy. Because that's going to be paying off 4, 5, 6 years down the road when Vladdy's not. That was big because, you know, the Rogers Center was not the Taj Mahal. Let's be honest. It was not the Taj Mahal. So that was important. Now that work is mostly done, mm-hmm. You know, the focus has to be on the field. And now we're talking about Mark Shapiro, the baseball guy. And as long as he has the absolute say in this organization, you know, I think this is going to be kind of where we are. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, absent somebody above Mark stepping in and taking control of this thing or saying, you know, you've had however many years of doing this. We've had no postseason success, 8 years. Let's try this, hint, hint, hint. Mm-hmm. Unless that happens, I don't know where we go.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there isn't a stepping in above at this point, because to me, you still have this equity from 2015 and 2016. Like, there's still a large part of the fan base that just loves the Blue Jays and was reinvigorated by that time. And the ballpark has been good enough and interesting enough that people want to spend time there. Like, I've said this a lot, but as many things as there are in the city, you know, Blue Jays fit for everybody. They fit for a family. They fit for you meeting up and catching up with your friend. And now that they've got these social areas and all these bars, like, it's been a real hit in terms of, hey, do you want to go down to this ballpark, regardless of the product? But now people are starting to feel pissed off to a different degree, going, wait, so how many years of this losing and the same thing and being told something that, you know, no one agrees with, when it's, again, now when it's your players that are saying the same things as the fans? This isn't even like the Leafs. Like, the Leafs players are at least on brand going, no, we all believe that it should be us four guys that just play here in perpetuity, regardless of what the actual outcomes are. We also believe, like the front office, that this is just a string of bad luck. it doesn't seem like the Blue Jays players are on the same page. Seems like Chris Bassett, one of the most vocal guys and one of the more respected guys saying this stuff, should matter. Okay, so before we wrap up, you've been generous with your time. You got your own show today. He did mention the miles on the tires, though, and I do have a bit of point of curiosity with what they're going to do with these arms, because Gausman yesterday, the velo's down again, and whatever, he's been up and down. He's been pitched well, but ultimately he, Barrios, and Bassett, like, they throw a lot. Jays don't have a ton of other great options, obviously, but the season's lost. Do you think that, you know, they're already talking about this, shutting down arms or going to a six-man rotation, finding ways to keep a few more miles off the tires?
Yeah, I don't think they have a choice. I mean, you know, on the to-do list, I mean, we're in the position with this team right now where we're, you know, we're almost at the point where we're saying, okay, yeah, they could be better, but okay, they could be better here, but there's more to do. You know, the first thing you have to do is they absolutely positively have to dress the lineup. Like, God love David Schneider and all these guys, but I mean, I can't have five of these guys in the lineup next year, not, and be a serious contender in the AL East. You know, at best of all the guys they have here right now, at best I'm looking at Spencer Horwitz as my everyday second baseman, Will Wagner is a bench guy, and Joey Loperfido is the bench guy. I honestly, beyond that, from what I've seen so far, you know, I don't see
that felt like one too many to me. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know what, if I'm carrying guys in the bench, I want lefty dudes with speed. Yeah. And left-hand hitters who are athletes. Joey Loperfido, you know, I'd rather have a left-hand hitter as my fourth outfielder, frankly, than a right-handed hitter. And same thing with Will Wagner. And Spencer Horwitz, I'm okay with him at second base.
He's fine.
Because I need help behind the plate. I need at least two legitimate thumpers in the middle of the order. And I need a completely reworked bullpen. Mm-hmm. It's possible that Brendan Little and Ryan Burr...
No, it's not.
Maybe one of those guys. You know,
that's what's possible. Okay, sorry, I should let you finish. I thought you were like, they could build a credible bullpen. I was like, no.
I like Cabrera. You know, who the hell knows what Jordan Romano is going to be like? But they need at least another power arm for the back of the bullpen. And I don't know if you're going to do all that. I don't know how you address starting pitching as well. I don't know how you address younger starting pitching. My thought process is you probably bring back those guys, you know, maybe at the trade deadline, go out and add another arm. At some point, you got to trade Bo. At some point, you can't play out next year with both Bo and Vladdy hitting free agency. You just can't. One of the two has to be traded. In an ideal world, you trade one of those guys. You get somebody's arm nearly ready for the majors, plus a younger guy that you can stick in your minor league system who's maybe your top prospect. Like, these are the things that the Jays have to do. So I guess what I'm saying is, when I look at where they are now and where they have to get the next year, I'm almost thinking, you know, why not run it back with these same starters? It's kind of the easiest thing to do. I'm already paying them. They're already under contract. They're acclimated here. But, yeah, I mean, let's be clear. There's a lot of work that needs to be done this offseason. And while they're doing that, the Orioles are going to get a year older. And a lot of those guys like Colby Mayo are going to get closer to being everyday players in the majors. The Red Sox are better than we thought they'd be this year. They're going to be better next year. The Yankees are the Yankees. And, of course, Tampa Bay has had such a down season that, you know, they're probably going to win the AL East next year. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of heavy lifting that needs to go on here. And as a result of that, I think the Jays are probably going to have to be, running on those old tires for at least another year.
Some might call it unfixable. Jeff, thanks for making time today, man.
No worries, man. Be well.
Yeah, you too. Jeff Blair, Blair and Barker later today. Always great. So what I want to say at the very beginning is that I do think that when you talked about the no pivot, that wasn't completely exclusive of criticism of the front office. I think that also meant equals no farm. No pivot equals no farm. Hey, we couldn't pivot. You look at a free agent landscape and you're like, hey, man, who did you want? It's like, no, there was nobody there. Chris Bassett knows that. No pivot was that there's a lack of flexibility with this team to make deals even if they are there. That they couldn't even get into the Juan Soto sweepstakes. They were never even a serious consideration. And then the unfixable stuff, yeah, I do think that is the team culture. I do think that that is the lack of farm system and the fact that they are going to continue to have limited flexibility moving forward. I think that the age stuff is certainly a thing, but yeah, I think what he's alluding to is cultural stuff with this team. That's my guess. That's my opinion. But you just look at every single thing that he said and you put it all together and you listen to the tone in which he's saying it. He's not being critical of his teammates. That's not the kind of guy he is. And as Jeff said, it's hard to believe that he's being critical of the manager, and especially given that unfixable certainly does not apply to that situation. But yeah, these players are smart. And when they're looking at it and saying, okay, so we're leaning on three older pitchers that have a lot of miles on the tires. We still don't have any lineup protection for Vladdy. It's very likely that Bo is going to be traded this offseason. In fact, it feels at this point like it's a certainty.
Yeah.
You've got to build out an entire bullpen, and you have to field, yeah, the other holes that Jeff mentioned. Like, players have belief in themselves. I'm sure that these guys actually view a lot of those guys as maybe even some of them better than they actually are. But also, yeah, no, they're being as realistic about this as we are. And yeah, like I said, now it's a lot of different layers to this, which is why I still can't believe that it's going to be a run it back. It just, to me, it just does not make sense, but whatever. The 2024-25 NHL season, though, that is just around the corner, which means you can catch the Toronto Maple Leafs in preseason action in just a few short weeks, which is crazy. I can't believe how fast it is. Maple Leafs preseason tickets will go on sale today. We got advance access for tickets for two preseason home games to give away to some lucky fans. On September 26th, watch your Toronto Maple Leafs take on the Montreal Canadiens at Scotiabank Arena. And on October 5th, they will be facing against the Detroit Red Wings also at Scotiabank. To enter for your chance to win these tickets, text today's code word preseason to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Again, today's code word is preseason, so text that in to 590-590 right now. And if you don't get them, you can still purchase your Leafs tickets at Ticketmaster.ca. All right, quick break, and we'll hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. Mike Jose. Simon Douglas.
Hey.
Looks like we're doing news to start.
Yeah, man, some NHL news. So it just came down a couple minutes ago that the Oilers have indeed declined the right to match for Philip Broberg and Dylan Holloway. So they will be St. Louis Blues, those two players. Edmonton will get a second and third back as compensation through this whole thing. People are saying, like, Friedge is saying it's all about kind of future flexibility for the Oilers. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah. I think Elliott was first, and Kipper had it too, so it's corroborated by both those guys. I don't know. Have the teams actually come out and said?
Yeah, the Oilers released a statement
13 minutes ago. Yeah.
So except officially for transaction, official, as
Edmonton
they say.
Requires a 2028 third-round pick and the rights to defenseman Paul Fisher for the Blues. So it's a separate thing. But, yeah, so they get the offer sheet stuff. I thought pretty much the second this thing was signed, the Broberg was gone. Mm-hmm. There was just no way that they could pay him that kind of money. I am, I guess, a little surprised by Holloway. That just felt like a piece that they were wanting to keep more, but maybe some of the other moves that they made it forward just made it a little bit more sustainable.
Yeah.
I will say that fans of the Oilers that are pissed about this, you should be pissed about the one thing, which is that they didn't get these contracts done earlier, because apparently they had offers on the table that were, I think it was like 1.1 for Broberg on a short-term deal, and then something just over $1 million for Holloway also on a short-term deal, like 2 to 3 year deals. So not recognizing the, or basically believing that the market would never come for these guys, that no one would do what the Blues did, is a misread. So you're allowed to criticize the front offices for that. I think once it was done, though, now they have done the right thing. And it's a reminder, I'm going to localize it again because everything is about the Leafs.
Yeah, buddy.
Everything is about the Leafs. One is that they need to make sure that this doesn't happen to them when they have Matthew Knies up, because he feels like the most ideal target for something like this. But the other one is, it is a reminder that the Oilers made this decision. Yes, are they getting back a couple of assets? Yeah, but who cares? They're trying to compete for a Stanley Cup, a second and a third. They don't give a crap about that. Those things are getting flipped.
Yeah.
But that the main thing is that they have cap space.
Bang.
That they, cap space is valuable.
Bang.
Letting guys, quote unquote, walk for free or you getting less back in a trade, but then having more cap space is valuable. And so for this team that might and looks like they're going to put Kane on LTIR to start the season, they're going to need to take him off eventually. Now they have a little bit more flexibility there.
Yeah.
When they head into the trade deadline, they're going to have a little bit more flexibility. Like, I just maybe Broberg turns out to be a bona fide stud. Maybe he is the guy that showed flashes in the postseason. Ultimately, though, this is a drastic overpay for St. Louis.
For sure.
They're taking a shot because they've got the cap space. They're in that window. They had the assets. It was a reasonable price. What they did was smart. You can't really deny that them taking these gambles was smart, especially given the term. But I just, I don't view this as cataclysmic for the Oilers. I just don't think that this is some horrific thing. And I think that them walking away ultimately at those numbers, that it's the right decision.
Yeah.
Holloway was the guy that I wavered on in terms of, okay, well, what do you do about him? And don't you try to bring him back? And isn't this one a little bit more palatable? But no, they just let both walk. They're like, hey, thanks for coming out. And then the mistake they made is these guys had more value than what you were offering
them.
Yeah,
you just kind of undersold it a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and you probably got a little too cocky. It was a bit of a little bit of a heat check where you've had a really great offseason. You've been signing players. Everyone's like, holy crap, Edmonton all of a sudden is this really good front office after years and years and years of being one of the worst in the NHL. And so, yeah, I am kind of curious, though, how they got this extra third, like future considerations.
Yeah.
That's just like St. Louis being like, we're sorry. It's because they
Our
got
bad.
Paul Fisher in a third round pick in 2028 for future considerations. I can't remember too many future considerations trades in the NHL. It's a baseball move.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Player to be named later.
Anyways, I like it for St. Louis. It's fine.
I think it's good for Edmonton. Yeah. Like, not good, but I'm exactly where you are. Of like, at first, I was like, ooh, this is going to be really tough for them to navigate. But then you remember, like, they had a great offseason anyway. And the big thing is, like, they can potentially do stuff at the deadline.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas, you know, if they matched, they were going to be not stuck, but they were going to have a hard time really kind of making any meaningful moves.
They got to go out and get another defenseman. But
for sure.
I will say that if you would have had Broberg and you would have pulled Oilers fans, like the odds that he was for sure going to be in your top six come playoff time, I don't know.
Right.
I don't think that was a thing. Holloway, I thought, was a little bit more interesting because, again, it's a 2-year deal for 2.2, and the fact that they walked away from that when they were already offering him a little over $1 million, that I guess it still is double technically, but yeah. I wouldn't be thrilled if I was a St. Louis fan and they walked away from, I'd be more like the Broberg one. St. Louis, you're like, yeah, this is a huge boom or bust. The Holloway one, the fact that they didn't want to go there on him was a little curious. But yeah, I do wonder, they get the extra third round pick as a...
Picks are coming back, man.
We're sorry.
Why not?
We're sorry.
Apologies.
We're so sorry. Doug Armstrong's just like, hey, how could I smooth this over? I know that this is unfair. I'm just robbing you guys. You guys are trying to win a Stanley Cup, trying to bring one back to Canada. I care about Canada. Here's an extra third for future consideration.
And future consideration, yeah. Patrick Laine got traded to the Habs.
Yeah.
Other big news in the NHL.
As if the Habs weren't hateable enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
This isn't winning you over, eh?
No.
Thoughts? Yeah. What do you got? Laine. It was Laine in a second for Jordan Harris.
I got to tell you that. So I think people are just assuming like, oh, Laine sucks. Like, no, he's fine. He's good. He's overpaid. And that's why they had to attach a second round pick. But if you're telling me you get Patrick Laine in a second round pick, you got a bunch of money coming off the books. You got these wingers that Montreal now has. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a fun and interesting team for a team that's been, you know, basically down in the dump since they did what everybody can do, which is beat the Leafs in the first round of a playoff series. I like their wingers. I like the trade for Montreal, and I think Laine will obviously become a Leaf killer. Like, that's just
for sure.
The
it
first
would be
thing
fun to have the Habs have some juice just for
they will. Look
Come
at
on.
Their team. They
That's
got
fun.
Some young, exciting
Let's
guys.
Go. Why
and now
not?
They add Patrick Laine. They should be able to score some goals. Like, that top six is interesting, skilled. Anyways, subscribe to the podcast, please. It really helps me out. And follow on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Reach out anytime. We'll see you tomorrow with Brady Quinn. Returning Brady Quinn.